Welcome to Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail. I'm Drew Mentock, joined by Irish Illustrated Senior Recruiting Analyst Eric Thomas. We'll get to subscriber questions later, but first we're going to discuss Notre Dame's recruiting weekend, where 18 prospects were on campus, including a name everyone has been curious about. St. Thomas Aquinas wide receiver Julius Jones Jr., the son of course, the former Notre Dame running back Julius Jones, but his son is a wide receiver recruit. I know he's been pretty tight with Oregon as well, but Notre Dame got him on campus, as well as his younger brother, who's a defensive back prospect in the class of 2028, Andre Jones. Eric, how did Notre Dame do with those two prospects, who obviously legacy everyone's interested in, and that's an important recruitment for a wide receiver position that, you know, moves a lot of needles in this day of college football?
Yeah, it's an important one for Notre Dame. They've really, you know, prioritized Julius Jones as like one of the top of the board, regardless of position targets throughout the course of the cycle. So, you know, heading into the visit, he was in Eugene, Oregon. I think it was on April 4th that Zach Blostein, our colleague who covers like the Florida territory, he put in a crystal ball pick for Julius to end up with the Ducks. Now, he was on campus at that point. He was really loving the visit. He was on campus with his brother, who Oregon is also recruiting, as you mentioned. So it was a lot going on. And obviously, I've talked in the past about how Julius is pretty embattled about, you know, do I want to continue the legacy and kind of go that direction? Do I want to strike out and do something on my own? So I think Oregon did a really good job of kind of going after that point of being like, you can build your own legacy. We can do it here. Look how special it's been here. And that's kind of a lot of the messaging that they got. But this weekend, Notre Dame got both of them, Julius and Andre, back on campus. And from what I heard, you know, talking to multiple sources, from talking to, you know, some folks that I know Zach talked to as well, Blostein put in the crystal ball pick. It sounds like Notre Dame at the bare minimum pulled even with the Ducks. They may have even pulled ahead for Julius. Now there's a couple factors in there. Obviously I mentioned, you know, Notre Dame offered his brother this weekend. That's a big step for them to kind of continue once again that family legacy piece. That's really important to them. But beyond that, they really kind of centered in on a couple other things. Like, he got to see practice and see this new look wide receiver room. And when you look at Julius Jones's game, what he does is, like, he's a really good separator. He's fast, but he's quicker than he is fast. He's really good at getting open. He's more of a king of creating separation and making guys miss tackles than he is, like, running through them kind of guy. So he's got that shiftiness. And it all reminds me a lot of the practice reports we're getting about Mylon Graham. So I think having that sort of model to look at and look what we're – this vision we have for this offense, I think that was just a great sell to be able to hit with him. And obviously the uptick in the passing efficiency of the offense, the downfield ability of the offense with CJ Carr, like, I just think that all of that really hit the right notes for a player who already understands what Notre Dame has to offer outside of football, right? There's very few guys who understand the tradition and the culture and everything that Notre Dame offers as a guy who's been around it his entire life. So from that side, Notre Dame really just needs to kind of keep hitting the drum of, what does that value mean for me? Right. That's what they do for every player. It's not unique, but that side of things, you don't have to explain it as much. You just have to do the secondary personalized touch. It's really about selling football and selling, hey, here's what this opportunity could be, because we know you understand what this looks like. And turns out, you know, coming out of this weekend, he was quite receptive to that message.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, because people often were like, well, your dad was a famous player here, why don't you come here? But if it always worked out that way, then Notre Dame probably wouldn't have CJ Carr right now either. So that building your own legacy thing can obviously be pretty attractive, and Notre Dame still has to recruit him pretty hard, especially a top prospect like that.
Absolutely. He's just too talented to assume it's going to be, you know, a foregone conclusion.
And then Notre Dame also, three players we wanted to highlight, offensive linemen, were an offensive tackle, Leighton Van Brandt out of Delaware. He's the 99th overall player in the class of 2027. And then there's two currently unranked players, offensive linemen, according to 24/7, in the class of 2028. They're also on campus in Providence Catholic, Illinois. Offensive lineman Ben Coleman and Carbondale offensive lineman Joseph Friardich. All three are on campus. How did those visits go?
Yeah, it was a really productive weekend for kind of all three. Now, I'll start with Von Brandt, just because he's someone that ever since he decommitted from Penn State in the wake of the James Franklin turnover and everything there, I've been pretty aggressive about saying that he would end up at Notre Dame. I know there's been some crystal ball picks logged over the course of this offseason, but I'm looking at it now. I put mine in for him to land at Notre Dame back in October. He's a guy who, the second you talk to him, he just strikes you as like a Notre Dame fit. And as someone who worked in that office, and I've talked with a lot of offensive linemen, right? Like, he, every time I talk to him, it's just like, God, that's a Notre Dame guy. So there's a fit there. He loves everything about Coach Rudolph and what they're building. He loves the style of play for Notre Dame. He loves the messaging about staying physical and the way that they go about coaching the position with accountability, I guess I would say. Like, he always talks about, like, yeah, you see Coach Rudolph barking at the guys, but you know he loves them. And so there's like that loving accountability that's sort of baked into the coaching style that I know he really appreciates and respects. And, you know, coming out of this visit, it just seems, you know, from talking to several sources and, you know, having a relationship with Leighton, like, it just seems like Notre Dame is going to be tough to beat. He talked about them having, you know, real momentum coming out of this visit. He's talked about how Notre Dame checks a lot of boxes for him, and everything coming out of this last weekend spent on campus is just a continuation. It's, you know, I continue to see myself as a fit at Notre Dame. I continue to see myself as a fit, you know, football wise, personality wise, you know, as a student. So the biggest thing with the offensive lineman in 2027, and why you're maybe not hearing me say like, oh, I'm 100% bullish, he's going to be in the class, is it the timing issue? They don't have a ton of spots for offensive linemen in this class after some pretty heavy imports the last few years. So the Irish are being a little bit more picky about how many numbers they have. And they already have one of their top, actually their top offensive line target in the class period was James Halter. They already have him in. So for them, it's less about like, do we like Leighton more than X, Y, or Z? It's more about like, who's going to pull the trigger first. I don't have a direct sense right now that Leighton's moving any more aggressively or quickly than some of these other targets, because it seems like a lot of these guys are openly talking about like, hey, I want to at least take this through officials. But as we saw with running back, like, you have one domino fall and things can change. So right. I'm not sure we're at a point where we're on like commitment watch for Leighton Von Brandt, but what I will say is I feel very good about my crystal ball whenever that actually ends up coming to an end, as long as he doesn't wait so long, he loses the spot.
That makes sense. And what about Ben Coleman and Joseph Friar-Deitch?
Yeah, two 2028 prospects. It's a little bit different. So both of them received offers while they were on campus. Coleman is a prospect from Providence Catholic, so obviously plays for Notre Dame alum Tyler Plants from the same high school that produced Miles Boykin. And I talked to both of these prospects, and starting with Coleman here, he talked about like the Fighting Irish like mentality or mantra. I forget the exact wording he used, but that's all baked in to his experience as a high school athlete through, you know, Coach Plants and some of the other people around them. So he understands a lot of what Notre Dame is about to a similar degree, just because a lot of it's familiar. So there's a lot of excitement from his side. He talked about how it meant a lot to him and his family that he got the offer. And it's still too early for him to even consider like, oh, are they a top school or anything like that? Like we talked about, he almost sounded like nervous. Like, I haven't even thought about that. So he's still kind of getting to that point, but I know he's excited. The folks over in Tinley Park are super excited. And it's definitely going to be a school to watch, you know, as we kind of move to the progress to the next stages of this recruitment. And then Friar-Deitch also grabbed an offer. It was cool. He and I talked, you know, just before he got the offer. And I asked him, I was like, what would it mean to you if that was extended? And he was like, oh, it would mean so much to me and my family. Like, it's really a vote of confidence. It's sort of a reassurance that everything I'm doing is on the right track. And, you know, it's what's better than getting an offer from Notre Dame as an offensive lineman was kind of what he put it. It's like, I mean, what else can I ask for? So he got the offer pretty shortly after that. I know it was extremely meaningful to him. He's been on a Midwest tour. He's been getting offers. He has offers from Illinois here in April. He got an offer from Arizona and Wisconsin in March. He told me in his interview he was heading up to Michigan State. Yeah, Michigan State. So he was there, you know, this last week. And he's also, you know, considering a potential visit to Michigan at some point. So there's a few schools there that are kind of in the range here, but, you know, or I'm sorry, he visited Indiana and Ohio State this week. Sorry, mixing up my guys here. But so Indiana and Ohio State are kind of next up, see if he gets the offers. But yeah, he's one that I would definitely watch for Notre Dame. He has the fit. The Irish love him. They told him before they sent the offer, like, keep doing what you're doing. You're exactly what we're looking for. Obviously followed that up. So I think that he's someone who could really check a lot of boxes, especially as a really athletic tackle prospect. I think he's someone that Coach Rudolph and company are really going to keep an eye on.
Those potential Indiana offers hit a little different now when you say that than it used to.
Exactly.
Another one of the top prospect on campus is Greenwich County Day, or Country Day, excuse me, Connecticut edge rusher
Mekhi.
Sorry, yeah, Mekhi Brown. He's the number 49th overall prospect and an eighth edge prospect in the class of 2027. He's 6'6". Looks like he has at least some crystal balls. I don't know how old they are to USC, but obviously big deal for Notre Dame to get on campus. They've been doing a lot better with edge rusher and defensive end recruiting. How did that visit go for him?
It went well. I don't get the sense that he's going to end up at Notre Dame. The Irish felt they put a good foot forward. They answered a lot of questions. It sounded like they impressed him, and there was seriously like, okay, this is interesting. This is a good spot. But he announced his commitment, which is tomorrow. He announced his commitment like, what, 2 days removed from the trip. Immediately, you know, the smoke was on USC. The Trojans have seemed to have been the favorites here for quite some time at this point. They've really started to push here. And I think he's going to end up with USC when he commits tomorrow. Sounds like Notre Dame sort of gave the best push they could. But ultimately, I think that with this one, they just didn't really have the momentum to really gain a ton of footing here, especially only offering in January. Like they just couldn't quite bridge the gap for a prospect like this when other schools have been interested for a longer period, had showed a lot more. So Irish made a real strong push, but in a really, really loaded group. I mean, I'm looking at the top schools, USC, Ohio State, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Notre Dame. It looks like USC is going to get this one done. What I will say, though, sort of related, USC recruiting him as defensive end, Marcus Fakatu, guy we've talked about quite a bit in the past, another California defensive lineman. He wants to play defensive end. He's been sort of recruited as DT, D-end. He's made it pretty clear at this point he wants to play D-end. If USC takes Mekhi Brown, there's a strong likelihood that they're all but out of the Fakatu sweepstakes. So just something to monitor for a top Notre Dame target, especially one who seems to switch up his visit schedule and his favorite lists like every other week. The Trojans dropping out, especially a local team like that, could be sort of a net positive impact of the Mekhi Brown recruitment.
Interesting. And for those listening, this will probably come out Friday morning. So depending on when you listen to it, Mekhi Brown could have already committed potentially to USC or wherever he ends up choosing, depending on when you're listening to this. But to wrap up kind of this last weekend's visits, I did want to talk about Benjamin Russell, quarterback, Kingston Prayer, 2028 quarterback. He's, I think, the number third ranked quarterback, according to 24/7 Sports in the class, obviously. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame for the next recruiting classes is maybe a little bit behind there. So people are obviously anxious to hear more about any potential interest there. How did that visit go? Notre Dame doesn't get a ton of kids from Alabama, but getting him to campus is obviously a first big step potentially.
Yeah, it was a really good visit. I mean, it seems like whenever quarterbacks get on campus, they enjoy their time with Coach Cadooley and company. So it went well. He definitely is excited about the potential of the future, you know, being recruited by and kind of getting to know the folks at Notre Dame. I think as with all 2028 quarterbacks, there's just kind of this little sense of like, all right, well, they haven't offered yet. They said they're going to do that in the next, you know, coming weeks, months, whatever it is, kind of like last year where it's extending into the spring, hopefully not all the way into the summer this time. So I think right now it's kind of a holding pattern for a lot of these guys. They don't want to get too far out over their skis about Notre Dame or anything, just because they know that there is a little bit of this eval period that's out of their hands. But by all accounts, it went extremely well. If Notre Dame were to offer, I think they would be a serious contender. Me personally, as you mentioned, I have some reservations about how well Notre Dame recruits Alabama in general. But look, it's only an issue until you fix it. So how do you fix it? You go get guys. So, you know, it's definitely a situation where I think if Notre Dame does ultimately extend the offer, they will be competitive here. As for, you know, what that actually looks like, what the timeline could be, I still think we're probably at least a couple of weeks from offers being extended, just so the staff can kind of hit the road in the spring, see some guys at practice, things like that. But my perception right now is he's sort of in that second group of guys who it's like, yeah, you could very easily see them get an offer. The staff clearly likes them. I'm just not sure that they're that, you know, clear-cut number one guy, which it seems like Neiman Lawrence is going to be, a quarterback from down in Florida. So there's a few options, Lucas Prock, Brady Quinn, been a couple other guys that were at Irish Invasion last year. So there's been a few 2028 quarterbacks that have been on campus that are sort of in that same range. But I think we're probably, if we're looking at offer watch, we're looking at Neiman Lawrence to start, and then it's going to kind of filter from there.
Okay, interesting. And then lastly, Notre Dame has another solid recruiting week and weekend coming up with the Blue Gold game coming up just over a week. That weekend may not be my favorite to cover as a beat reporter, but it's usually a pretty good time to get prospects on campus. Eric, who are some names to note that are already confirmed to be at the scrimmage or just even coming up to campus next week?
Yeah, so we're working on, you know, full visitor report and everything else. We should have some more details there here soon. But just looking at the visitor list on Irish Illustrated, we have Champ Mons, the one of the last or the last quarterback prospect that Notre Dame has offered in 2027 that is uncommitted. He's the last standing member of the big three that we were working with much of this offseason. So he's a big visitor on campus. It's Notre Dame, Ohio State, Florida State are kind of the big three there. Notre Dame is going to host four-star wide receiver Miles McAfee from Archbishop Spaulding in Maryland. I wrote about him in my receiver roundup earlier today. Big-time prospect, never been on campus before, so it's a little bit tough to say anything with definitive, you know, any sort of gumption or anything. But I do think that if everything goes well, we will see him back on campus in June, and he seems very interested in Notre Dame. Top edge target, Abraham Cisse. He's going to be back on campus. He's one that's been considered a Notre Dame lean for some time. I still believe that is the case, even as things have kind of expanded in his race. So that's a big one to get on campus here ahead of official visits, kind of trying to lock down a top target. Number one linebacker in the country, Caden Henderson, is going to be here this weekend. That is especially a big pull because Notre Dame isn't his top five. Caden's a guy that Loy and I have been pretty upfront. We have a hard time seeing him end up picking Notre Dame. Right now, the steam's on Miami. It was on Texas A&M before. You know, LSU, Miami, Texas A&M, Ohio State, Notre Dame, a couple others in there. But the Irish have a chance. It's just they got to get him over the hurdle of not wanting to play in cold weather. It's a legitimate thing. He just doesn't want to do it. So, and then the last one here of note, safety John Gay III out of Chaminade Madonna, actually the same high school that assistant running backs coach – Sean Shivers attended Chaminade Madonna. Gay's an interesting one. Notre Dame offered him when he was still unranked. He was kind of an up-and-comer. And at this point, he's like a full-fledged three-star. He's starting to, you know, burst onto the scene nationally, getting more offers. So he's kind of an intriguing one in the 2027 class. And then the last one I'll note here is actually early next week. Our colleague Brian Doan reported this on Irish Illustrated a little bit earlier. Peter Borke, former Michigan quarterback commit, he is going to visit Notre Dame Tuesday to Thursday, I believe it was. I know he gets there on Tuesday. All expectations are Notre Dame will offer while he's on campus. So that was kind of a discussion point going in for him. He loved Notre Dame the first go around. He was waiting for that Notre Dame offer when they went after, you know, Gerard and Peyton Houston in the first go. In chapter two, they connected with him before they offered the big three. So he's definitely a guy who has a lot of interest. I think Notre Dame will be a strong contender there should everything go well, you know, over the course of that visit next week. So should be some dominoes falling, including some pretty important ones under center.
Awesome. We'll stay tuned to Irish Illustrated for more updates on all those prospects over the next couple weeks. But that's all for this segment. We'll be right back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. And we're back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question comes from Kay Beasley. Every year we get those can't-miss realistic targets that due to being a legacy target, the positional value, or maybe the lack of targets behind them are critical to the success of the class. Are Julius Jones and Quinton Brunell the top two must-gets this cycle?
I would definitely say Jones is one of them. Notre Dame has made it very clear he's a top-of-the-board prospect. He is a legacy from one of the most talented schools down in Florida. They're recruiting several other players in that from that school in the 2028. They're even looking at 2029 players down there. So, and in 2027, obviously, best friends with Zayden Gamble. They're one of their top safety targets. So I would say Julius Jones is definitely one. I wouldn't put Burrell in that same one, especially just two guys at the same position. I would say the number two guy here, and this might be a little bit controversial or whatever you want to call it at this moment, but I would still put Marcus Facatu here. Like he's a guy that even as he's established, like I want to play DN, not interior. And he's kind of set himself to, every visit, he seems like he has a new favorite, and he's looking at, oh, Notre Dame is my one, oh, they're the four, oh, they're the three, oh, they're the one. And it bounces around. Like, as chaotic as it's been, this is a guy that Notre Dame's recruited for like 4 years now. They have put so much time and effort into landing this guy over the course of about half a decade now. Like, I just don't see a world where not landing him, regardless of coaching turnover or anything else, isn't anything but a massive disappointment for the staff, right? Like, and that's not projecting at them. Like, for them, they would be disappointed. So I think those are probably the top two must-gets, just because of the time invested and everything else, positional value, which is mentioned. But one I'll kind of throw in there, just because I do think it's an interesting one at the very least. I do think landing Peter Borque could be pretty important. And I say that just because, like, one, it, him coming next week provides a clean, like, stop the bleeding on the quarterback conversation, right? Like, he wants to move quickly. So that answers a question. It answers it quickly. And it gives Notre Dame a higher rated player at the position than Teddy Girard was, regardless of your evaluations of them. Like, no matter how you slice it, it's a very important pickup with a high quality, well-regarded player. And they basically would have manifested it over the course of like 2.5 weeks. So if you're looking at like, what's the most important critical one right now, I mean, it's tough to beat signal caller. So I think it's, it's pretty important to mention Borque here for his visit next week.
Oh, that all makes sense to me. Our next question is from Jay New. What's the pulse of linebacker recruiting?
Odd. I've written about this, and I'll say it again here. I think Brian Jean-Marie has probably been set up a little bit to get the Mike Brown treatment in year one, where like he inherited a linebacker board that was in flux and was in flux before he got in place. And now they're kind of trying to rework it in real time. And that's a difficult process to do. So I do think that there could be potentially a hitch in 27, which is just sort of unfortunate because obviously there's a lot of veterans about to leave. Like there's going to be some turnover in that room. It's a weird time to get caught out with a transition like this, but look, they have a shot at Caden Henderson. If they land him, it all goes away. They've moved the needle with Joaquin Gouda and Roman Igbuike. I don't actually know how to say his name, but out of Illinois, both SEC kind of talents, and Noah Glover, another linebacker with Georgia, sort of a Georgia perceived lean or Georgia ties. Like these are all top linebackers that Notre Dame has over the course of this offseason moved the needle with and set themselves up to be contenders for, but I don't necessarily know that they lead for any one of them. So that's kind of the pulse of things now. It's like, there's a lot of good work to get to a competitive spot, but given the weirdness and the state of the transition up front, I do wonder if it'll look a little bit like the 2025 receivers class where it's just like, oh, you're in the final five, but you're in the final four. But that being said, I do like that they've been pretty aggressive about moving on to the 2028 class. They have quite a few prospects sort of in the pipeline there that they're starting to get relationships with earlier than they would have previously. They're already starting to leverage previous relationships that Brian Jean-Marie had at his previous stops. So I do think that they're getting a head start to kind of overcome this hurdle with the ensuing class. I just think building the plane out of the air was an especially difficult assignment for the staff at linebacker this cycle for several reasons, especially because we kind of have a couple questions about this later, but especially with just, the way they're recruiting some other positions and the numbers, linebacker has kind of been the one that they've taken a little bit of a step back in terms of the volume. So when you take a step back in terms of volume, you also cast a little bit of a smaller net and it just sort of cycles. So I do think that they have the pieces in place to get this right. I don't know how high end the 2027 recovery will be now that they have, the pieces in place post Max Bolla leaving and Ellis McGaskin's decommitment.
Yeah, and just a reminder, too, that Max Bolla, as you mentioned, left, and then also Al Washington moved to linebackers and then left for the Dolphins, and then Brian Jean-Marie didn't officially get hired until February 7th, I believe. So it definitely had a lot of weird transitions there, and I understand those listening to it. It's a little odd because that is usually a position where Notre Dame is able to get their top guy, but this might just be a weird transition year, as you kind of touched on. But yeah, a lot of things kind of flux, but kind of preview this next question from Memphis Phil. With nickel becoming more of the base defense, how has that shifted linebacker and defensive back recruiting recently? Not just the number of recruits per position, but also attributes for those positions.
It's a great question. So Marcus Freeman talked about this at National Signing Day. He talked about how they wanted to bring in a large group of, or it might have been signing day for the transfer portal, but he talked about how they wanted to bring in more defensive backs because they play nickel more and they feel like the ability to rotate through and have, you know, guys they trust, you know, at least two deep across the back end is something that's really important to the staff. And especially in this nickel world, that means that instead of having four, you need 60, right? So it's just a different math and calculus. Linebacker is kind of taking the brunt of that. You've seen Notre Dame is sort of pared down a little bit the number of linebackers they're taking each class. They're taking massive groups of defensive backs the last few years. And when I'm looking at the actual physical characteristics, like Nick Reddish is a guy that Notre Dame loved in no small part because they saw him as a homegrown nickel option. Dallas Golden is another guy they talked about playing nickel. Mark Zachary, I know it hasn't worked out that way thus far, but they had talked about playing nickel with him when he was in high school. And it's happened with a few others. Like, I'm sure at some point there will even be the conversation of like, can we use Joey O'Brien as a nickel the way that Kyle Hamilton could play nickel at one point? Like down the line, that could be a conversation. So there's different ways to conceptualize what they want from the nickel. Like you have your more traditional like safety type, right? They're the hard hitters that are gonna hold up in the box. Then you have more of your coverage specialists, the Jordan Clarks, who are like they just want to stick. And so there's a couple different avenues to take the nickel assignment, but for guys like Reddish and for some of these young corners, like I think Chaz Smith has talked about potentially playing nickel or even safety, you know, with different coaches. Like it's all about how well can they turn? How well can they identify, okay, I need to, you know, flash my hips and get my feet wide and just pivot and keep speed. Like the ability to pivot in space and keep flush with the receiver and not just get beat out of the move is so much more important than nickel. Because unlike the other corner spots where in theory you have a sideline to assist, you're kind of in no man's land. So
Right.
it's just a very different spatial awareness and ability to react that they're looking for. And so for to use Reddish as an example again, like he played safety, he played nickel, he played outside corner, he played linebacker. Like this is a guy who's very comfortable kind of wherever he is out in space, and he's very capable of coming up near the line and still excelling at coverage responsibilities, even from I guess what you would call a suboptimal coverage position, right? So I think those are some of the things that they're looking for. They're looking for guys with great hips, great feet, can really turn and pivot quickly, get on their horse. That's sort of the classic nickel. Size is a little bit less. Like Reddish is smaller, but we see with Dallas Golden, he's like what, 6 foot-ish, 6 foot-1. Like some there's a couple little bit of wiggle room with size and some of those characteristics. It's really more about the athletic measurables and some of that testing ability that's more about less about, I should say, your 40-yard speed than like your 10-yard split. That's more important for nickel.
Yeah, and then to your point, Jordan Clark might have had the best nickel season at Notre Dame, at least recently, and I wouldn't, he wasn't, I think he ran a 4.6. He was probably 5'9", like maybe not jump off the charts, but he could do all the little things you needed him to do. And you also mentioned Joe O'Brien. Luke Talich is also playing some nickel right now too, so they can rotate some bigger bodies in there. But again, that is taking a spot away from a linebacker on the field. And yeah, Joey O'Brien does seem a natural fit for that at 6'5" once he fills out a little bit more, especially. Our next question is another one from Kay Beasley. What's Eric's opinion of quarterback recruiting and whether or not they cast too shallow of a net? Should they continue looking for a 2027 quarterback, or would you put more emphasis on a 28 quarterback recruit and even a two quarterback class?
I'm not a huge proponent of like going through the process with the two quarterbacks class. I know Notre Dame sort of found themselves at that position after Grubbs already signed, but it's a difficult tightrope to walk like Ohio State's trying to do it right now, if you're doing that out front and trying to signal that, especially these days. So I don't necessarily love like overtly going with that approach in 26, but or in excuse me, in 28. But if there's a class to do it, it's 28 because the quarterback board is loaded. What I would say is I think that there are still options worthy of a take at the quarterback position for Notre Dame in 2027. Champ Mons is one of them. Peter Borque is one of them. And there's a couple others that have been posted throughout, you know, various boards and threads and things. But I think that those two guys, like if you can get one of them to commit, and right now I would say Borque is the more likely of the two. Like, I think that's still a serious value add to the quarterback room to the point where you don't need to spin off and look somewhere else. If you go much further down the board, I think it warrants the conversation of like, okay, especially if we can get underclassmen transfers in now, and that's something that we think is a repeatable process moving forward, it might be worth it to try and get someone that way, because you might actually save some value there. Like, quarterback recruits are an expensive signing. There's just no two ways about it. But if you can get a guy out of the portal with limited experience who's just open to that opportunity of, like, I want to compete with these young guys, like, you can usually find a better requisite value for yourself there. So I think in some sense, like, I hate to make this a budgetary conversation, but, like, that could very much be what it comes down to, is just where can we find the best bang for our buck to round out this quarterback competition, especially since it doesn't seem that Blake Hebert is a major factor in it. So I think I would pump the brakes on, are we done with 27 just yet until we get through these next couple of visits? But I would keep an eye out for the potential of, like, okay, if we get much further down the board, we're going to be as aggressive as possible for Neiman Lawrence plus a transfer. I think that's kind of the next step of what going down the board would look like.
Yeah, and in my perspective too, is, like, you never know what's going to work out. If you could put less effort in 2027, you could get your guy early, like you did with Deuce Knight, and then something else happens later in the cycle. Yeah. And then you don't have guys you love for, you know, two cycles in a row, and you're in a bad spot. And that's, Notre Dame wants to get more homegrown quarterbacks, and the way to do that is to continually put effort into it, even when things haven't gone perfectly. So
exactly. I think you need to keep them on the roster, right? So, like, if you take two in a class, almost instantly your first thought is, okay, who jettisons, who leaves? And so if you want to do the homegrown quarterback style, like Notre Dame's openly talked about, like, you need to be able to keep guys on campus for at least, like, 2-3 years and see what they got. You have to. 1 year rentals and 1 year leavers are just not going to lead to that outcome. So Notre Dame's done a very good job with that recently, with several quarterback competitions, including transfers coming in and just sort of outright winning them before it was, you know, ever really a competition. But I think for moving forward, especially with, you know, these young guys kind of vying for the next spot behind Carr, like, you really got to make sure that you have a couple, you know, three, maybe even if you're lucky, four dudes who are ready to be here for 2 years and really duke that out.
Yeah, I agree. And our last question for today is from Flores JM. What are the two non-quarterback position groups we cannot miss on in the class of 2027 in light of what's been filled in 2026?
I think the obvious layup answer here is linebacker, and I'm going to include transfers in there because obviously we talked about some of the difficulty with what it might look like to come together on the linebacker high school front, especially with the turnover expected. So look for transfers on that one as well. I think that Notre Dame will have to at least bring in some starting caliber talent to support, especially if Kingston Viliamuasa breaks out the way some of us, you know, have talked about thinking he can, and he might be an NFL guy. So there's a couple factors to consider on that side and with high school and transfer. But the other one I'll mention is interior defensive line. We've talked about on Irish Illustrated Insider and several other of our, you know, published works, audio works. Our staff has talked extensively about how impressive that interior group looks right now. But I guess the one sort of caveat to that is everyone in that group that they've mentioned other than Christopher Burgess Jr. is an upperclassman. So if you look at, you know, what is the long-term viability of this group, there's a lot of question marks for Notre Dame at interior defensive line. And obviously there's been noise about Al Washington's ability to recruit those players over the last few years. They were really building to this 2027 class to get some landmark wins there. I think that for Notre Dame, like, they really need to, regardless of the transition and everything else, especially with a renowned teacher like Charlie Partridge of the position, like, you need to capitalize on this window, and everything that you've built for the last few years was moving towards 2027 being that breakout. And I think Notre Dame needs to realize that. And I'm not saying that as if they're looking like they're going to come up short. They have several great options. Obviously it's hotly contested. The Irish were, you know, the number one clear cut choice for David Fuller-Unshoe when they offered. Now it looks like schools like Ohio State and Texas Tech and a few others are heavily involved there. So, like, it's not a straight line path there, but I think they need to realize that build that they spent years kind of building towards with the interior defensive line, get a couple of blue chip guys, preferably guys with some serious size. You know, Braden Parks falls into that category as well. And there's just a few guys that they put in years of work to get here. And it's like, regardless of any coaching transition, if Notre Dame can hit and get, like, two blue chip interior as well as, like, two of the blue chip edges, and then anything else is peanuts, like, that is a great defensive line class to follow up, especially with two very good edge rushers that Notre Dame is high on from the last class, and obviously a pretty I don't even know how to describe Elijah Golden's ceiling. If he can fix his pad level, he can be awesome. He just, you don't know, he's a DN, he's a DT, like they want him to play inside. So a lot of potential, a lot of question marks. And then Tiki Hole is a nose tackle. So if you get two blue chip prospects in this class, especially guys who can play three tech, that is a major boon for Notre Dame moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. And as long as Coach Partridge is here too, then he seems to be so far likely to get good returns on good prospects as well. So if you can get them on campus, so that makes sense. And but that's all for burning up the boards. Thanks to everyone who tuned in to Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail podcast. Eric, once again, I really appreciate you hopping on to talk about recruiting.
Always a pleasure, Drew.
We'll be back on Saturday with an Irish Illustrated instant analysis after what we believe will be Notre Dame's jersey scrimmage and a press conference with Coach Marcus Freeman. Then we'll be back with two new episodes of the Insider podcast next week on Monday and Thursday. I'm Drew Mentok with Irish Illustrated and with Eric Thomas, also of Irish Illustrated. We'll see y'all again soon.